from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to the two Johnnies for the afternoon entertainment. It is Thursday, July 27th. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Rebecca Cray live in studio and Chrissy Gray live from Canada. We'll discuss what next for Vera Powell and the Girls in Green. We've in-depth interviews from rugby and sailing. Ireland's Hugo Keenan was chatting to Marie Crowe and I spoke to Sailing Ireland head coach Roy Fitzpatrick. Jeff Shepherd will be dialing in with his eye on America. Plus, we'll wrap up all of today's latest news headlines. As always, if you want to get in touch, drop us a text 51552 or tweet us at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Yes, hello there. Good evening. Great to have your company. Rebecca Cray across me. Rebecca, how are you?
I'm good, Shane. How's things?
I'm all good. Chrissy Gray will be joining us very shortly. We're going to be chatting soccer, but first, couple of news headlines. Scott Beaman has been appointed head coach of the Ireland Women's 15 team, with the Englishman agreeing a 3-year contract with the IRFU. The former Harlequins Leicester and Bath scrum half takes over the role from Greg McWilliams, who left after just 18 months in charge following the 2023 Six Nations. Beaman has been part of the England Women's setup since 2015, helping the Red Roses to 6 Six Nations titles, as well as reaching World Cup finals in both 2017 and 2022. In soccer, Stoke City have signed goalkeeper Mark Travers on a season-long loan from Bournemouth. St. Patrick's Athletic striker Owen Doyle has retired from football with immediate effect for personal reasons. The 35-year-old Dubliner scored 18 goals in 63 matches during 18 months with the League of Ireland club. In cricket, Ireland's qualification for next year's T20 World Cup has been confirmed after today's match with Germany was rained off in Edinburgh. The team had already beaten Italy, Denmark, Austria and Jersey. No hurling strongholds or cricket strongholds there in their previous qualifiers, and needed just one more point from their remaining two fixtures to secure their spot in the USA and West Indies in 2024. The abandonment today gave them the point they needed ahead of a final qualifier against Scotland tomorrow, which will now act only to decide who tops the group. We'll be chatting to Irish Times journalist Nathan Johns on cricket tomorrow evening on the show. Finally, in swimming, Mona McSherry finished 15th in the semi-finals of the 200-metre breaststroke at the World Aquatics Championships in Fukuoka, Japan. After advancing from the heats earlier today, McSherry, who qualified for Olympics earlier this week, was 5th in her heat in 2 minutes 26.59 seconds to qualify 16th overall, and went slightly faster at the semi-final stage, clocking 2:26.27, but missed out on a place in the final. Dara Green missed out on progressing to the semi-finals in the men's event despite winning his heat. Green clocked 2 minutes 12.21 seconds to finish 18th. 16-year-old John Short finished 8th in his heat of the 200 metre backstroke and 22nd overall, while Victoria Catterson finished 8th in her heat in the 100 metre freestyle and 26th overall. Tomorrow we'll see world championship debuts from Mac McCusker and Tom Fannin. McCusker goes in the 100 metre butterfly and Fannin in the 50 metre freestyle, while Danielle Hill returns to the pool for the 50 metre butterfly heats.
Game on.
Football.
But turning our attention to football, as I mentioned at the top of the show, Rebecca Cray is in studio and Chrissy Gray is live from Canada. Before we get into Women's World Cup chat, just to update our listeners, there are three teams, League of Ireland teams, in European action this evening. Ferencvaros are currently hosting Shamrock Rovers, and it is nil all after 6 minutes played in Hungary. We'll keep you up to date with that one. That one kicked off at 6 o'clock. At 7 o'clock, just as we come off air, Dundalk are in Iceland to play KA. And finally, at 7:45, Derry City host Finnish side Kuopion Palloseura, I believe. We'll go with it, Rebecca. We'll go with it.
Fantastic.
So we'll keep you up to date with that. Nothing to report, as I said, in the Shamrock Rovers match at the moment. Pico Lopez is capping the side. Gary O'Neill's in midfield. Johnny Kenny and Richie Tell are leading the line. No Jack Byrne or Graham Burke for the Hoops. However, let us chat Women's World Cup, and we will continue the discussion on Ireland, of course, who are now out of the World Cup, but there still is one match to play against Nigeria on Monday. Before we get into that chat, a couple of matches today, starting with the match in Ireland's group. Nigeria ripped up the script in Group B of the World Cup with a thrilling 3-2 defeat of Australia in Brisbane. 24 hours, of course, after Ireland's hopes of making the knockout stages were ended by Canada, the Nigerians pulled off a shock win to set up a fascinating final round of games. The Matildas would have sealed their place in the last 16 with a win here. Instead, they're heading for a huge clash against Canada, who need a draw to progress. Nigeria, the group's fourth seeds, take on the girls in green, knowing a point will also be enough for them to march on. So any talk of that game being a dead rubber is now completely off the table. Rebecca, I assume you didn't see this one coming.
Not at all. No, I obviously know that Nigeria were a decent side, you know, one of the top African nations. But I don't think even Australia obviously didn't see it coming. You know, they were quite confident going off the back of their win against ourselves. And, you know, I know that the pre-match talk from Tony Gustav and before they played us was very much, you know, confident, and we know the starting 11, we know the finishing 11, all this kind of chat. So I'd say they were very much rattled, to say the least, today. You know, the Nigerians just stood up to the plate. You know, they looked like they wanted it more at times, and obviously we're clinical in front of goal.
Absolutely. Christy Gray, would you share those sentiments? Have you been a bit underwhelmed with Australia at this World Cup so far?
Yeah, I mean, they're struggling with not having Sam Kerr. Obviously, she's a huge presence. And I think that sort of maybe has taken out the wind of the sails a little bit of the host nation. And I think, obviously, it's a lot of pressure when you're hosting such a huge tournament and to sort of live up to those expectations on the world stage. I think they are struggling a little bit, but you know what? The group is quality all around. It just shows you that's football. Whoever shows up on the day is more than capable of taking the points, as we sort of saw yesterday in the match as well, which I'm sure we'll get into later. But yeah, I'd say Australia's struggling a little bit so far.
Would that fill you with confidence as a Canadian now coming, not to get look too far ahead, but looking at that last round of the group fixtures?
You know what? I hope so. I think obviously yesterday was, for me as a Canadian, a scary first half anyways. The Irish definitely looked like the stronger of the two sides. And I think it just sort of shows you whoever's going to show up and work hard has a chance to sort of take the game. And so it'll be the same thing with Australia versus Canada. I hope that it continues that way. And I hope we're able to learn our lesson and that we can't start like that and expect that things will just go our way. Obviously proud of the girls for battling and managing to get those 3 points in the end, but it was by no means easy. And I think we'll just have to go into the match against Australia with the same sort of sentiment, knowing that we're going to have to fight hard to get all 3 points, or 1 point in that case, to advance.
Yeah, by no means easy though, Christy. Like, were you concerned? Were you worried at any stage that Canada weren't going to turn it around?
Yeah, you know what? I think Ireland came off, obviously there's that last minute change with Heather Payne and then having Aina O'Gorman come in, which is great for LOI. I think it's the first League of Ireland player to ever start a World Cup match, which is exciting for many reasons. But you know what? I think when they scored within, I think it was, what, the fourth minute, I think it just showed Ireland was out there to fight, and I was absolutely nervous. I think you could see it all over the pitch. We just looked discombobulated and disorganized, and Ireland was storming down and sort of stepping on our necks a little bit and creating tons of chances, and really looked like the better of the two sides. So I was definitely nervous, obviously lucky to get that sort of equalizer just before half, which I think sort of kept us in it, and then came out sort of in the second with a renewed sort of sense of purpose and energy, which I think carried us through, and deservedly then were able to get the 3 points. But absolutely going into half, I was nervous, and I quite honestly don't think Canada looked deserving to win. But I think looking at the second half, we really sort of pushed on and really started to hit our stride and created a ton of chances moving forward. So yeah, it was an exciting game, but I was definitely nervous entering halftime, I'll say that for sure.
Becca, what's the overriding emotion now that the dust has begun to settle, I suppose?
Yeah, I can actually confirm Christy was very nervous. She did text me saying she was going to support Ireland if I had it continued. So, now that it's all kind of settled down, it's a case that, looking back on the two games, you know, I don't think anyone would have ever thought, you know, coming into these first two games, you know, against two top 10 teams in the world, you know, we would have competed the way we did. Not to say that I underestimate the girls, but I think on the outside, you know, people in the media maybe just kind of saying, yeah, grand, we're there or thereabouts, you know, we're there, I suppose, just as hope. People, you know, weren't of this thinking of just being a token kind of turn up. They gave such a great account of themselves across the two games. You know, yesterday, the first 30 minutes, they were absolutely on fire. You know, Katie McCabe was leading the charge completely. You know, and Canada looked rattled. They were quite sloppy, you know, through those first half an hour. I think then we just kind of dropped into that flat five, you know, and the box midfield kind of just went out of shape. It was more of a four across the middle then, which kind of just, you know, welcomed the pressure then from Canada. And obviously there was a flash bit of rain as well, which didn't help the you know, the conditions were pretty wild, and obviously we were unlucky to get that goal against us just before the half, and I think it just knocked the wind out of our sails, as Christy said. And then look, at half time you've three substitutions being made by Canada, you know, 634 caps between them coming into play. You know, that's something that we can't say we have, you know, and that's not to say, look, we still fought to the end. I think Ciara Caruso did fantastically up top on her own as a lone nine. You know, she drew the fouls when she needed to. You know, Kadisha Buchanan looked pretty ordinary in that first half, you know, and subsequently went off after the first half. So look, I wouldn't be too disappointed. You know, we're still very much a young, you know, squad, with the exception of the likes of Niamh Fahey, Louise Quinn, Diane Caldwell and Anya O'Gorman. You know, Katie is still only 27. You know, you have Jamie Finn, who was unlucky, as we keep saying, only 25. Denise is 29. You know, and you still have such a wealth of youth here with the likes of Tara O'Hanlon at Piemont, you know, Jess Sue coming back from injury, Abby Larkin, Jamie Thompson at Rovers, Jesse Stapleton, to name but a few. You know, so look, the future's bright. I think they gave an amazing account of themselves. They can be very, very proud.
Not to look too far ahead, because listen, we do have a big match against Nigeria. The Roadcaster is going to be in Dalymount Park for that one, so do get down if you're around Fisra as well. There is another match in the World Cup still to play, and as you mentioned, it's not a dead rubber considering Nigeria's permutations of trying to get out of the group. But you mentioned that the young players coming through, might this World Cup be a turning point for, say, some of the defenders? You have Louise, Anya, Niamh, Diane, all north of 33, Ruisha, Little John, Sinead Farrelly, both in a similar bracket as well. So might this be a transitional period for Ireland?
Yeah, look, I'm the same age as most of them there, you know, and I know probably for the likes of them,
it's not old.
Exactly.
International football status, Becca.
But yeah, look, I'd like to say that, you know, I'd say this is what they were holding out for, you know, to get to that major tournament, which they duly deserved, you know. And if anyone was to be deserving of it, was that group, you know, because they've been slogging along the last few years, you know, had to experience all the pre-2017 things, you know. And look, if this was their final kind of act, so be it. I think they can go out with their heads held high. You know, Anya has a young family now as well, you know, and she obviously came out of retirement after being in it, you know, after the Colin Bell spell. So look, it wouldn't surprise me if we do see the likes of themselves, you know, leave the international scene after this World Cup. But as I mentioned previously, we've got a wealth of youth coming through. I think if we keep that core, obviously with Katie leading the charge, Denise, you know, they'll be the experienced ones, you know, I suppose going into further, hopefully major tournaments to come.
I think Mark McCadden tweeted, it was part of the presentation in 2017, because you mentioned this about the players who've slogged along and being there for that journey, those players that I mentioned there. And like some of the bullet points on that were just access to nutritionists, individual strength and conditioning programs, gym membership for squad, hotel accommodation to include, at the very least, working and reliable Wi-Fi, clothing for travel to be provided before meeting up at the airport, more home-based training sessions, goalkeeper coach remain for campaign, not change from game to game, match fee for all international fixtures, €300, bonus for competitive fixtures, €150 win, €75 draw, qualification bonus to be agreed with team captain and player representatives at least 4 weeks prior to start of qualification campaign. So, you know, that is quite a journey as well. Yeah. And the one I do want to focus in on is more home-based training sessions, because just a word on Anya O'Gorman. Christy mentioned it there as well, Becca. Like, I mean, the first League of Ireland player to represent Ireland at a World Cup. Here's hoping for many more.
Yeah, well, for a starter, Abby obviously came in, last game. But that's the thing, you know, we want to see so much more of that. Obviously, we had got a large group of the girls that played across the tournament, started in the Women's National League, as it were, you know, with Piemont and Shells and Rohini previous to that. And, you know, it's a case that we want to see, you know, the girls that are playing in the domestic leagues here now be the next, you know, Katie McCabe's, the next Denise O'Sullivan's. And it's just going to take that investment, you know, and funding. And I hope, and I know, you know, the kind of the things that the girls have achieved in the last year or two, has just opened the eyes of so many people across the country. You know, there is, you know, there's major kind of, I suppose, positives to be taken from women's football. I really do hope it's changed perception in many people's minds of what we have to give in this country, and obviously the backing of so many different sponsorships, the likes of Sky and Cadbury. Once they get on board and keep pushing for it, we can achieve so much more, you know, and we can achieve so many great things. We can make major tournaments, you know, a thing of just something that we always do, and we'll always get there, you know. And I think that just needs to keep going, and you know, just invest in the women's game and keep all eyes on it now after this World Cup.
Good news for Anya O'Gorman of Shamrock Rovers, obviously. Bad news for Shamrock Rovers currently, because they are trailing Ferenc Varos 1-0 after 16 minutes in their Europa Conference League qualifier in Hungary. Chrissy, on the match itself, like I'm keen to kind of get the Canadian viewpoint from yourself. Did you feel Ireland were too predictable?
You know what? I don't think they were too predictable at all. I think, obviously, without sort of maybe Heather Payne's like athleticism, who in watching sort of the pre-tournament matches against both Zambia and France, I thought she did incredibly well getting up and down the wing, which sort of complemented Katie McCabe on the other side. So I think maybe in terms of Ireland's squad, that was potentially like a loss or an area that Canada could look to exploit. You know what? I wouldn't say they looked predictable. I think clearly, as we sort of already chatted about in the first half, if anything, if they were expecting Ireland to be predictable, they were anything but that, and we weren't prepared for it. Hence sort of our disorganization across the pitch throughout defensive, midfield, and up front. We really struggled to create many chances. So yeah, I wouldn't say Ireland looked predictable. I think they came out with the fighting spirit that anyone should have expected them to come for. Obviously, it's their first time on the World Cup stage, and they wanted to give everything, their heart, their soul. I mean, you could see from the fans in the stands, like there's so many people tweeting about how it felt like it was majority Irish, and you can feel that and see that through the players' passion and how they played. So I wouldn't say Ireland looked predictable. I think, if anything, maybe we weren't expecting such like creativity and drive. So I don't know if Canada was under expecting or what the situation was, but we weren't prepared for Ireland, I don't think, as it clearly was shown when they were up and creating all these chances and flying really past us for the first 30 minutes.
Absolutely. I suppose on that, Rebecca, great performances individually, done very well, and great stories, and it is a positive story for this group, and hopefully that continues in the right vein. Nations League coming up, well, sorry, starting with Nigeria on Monday, and then a Nations League campaign against Northern Ireland, Albania, and Hungary as well. So with that in mind, looking at the management team that's in place, in your opinion, is Vera Powell and the team she has in place the right people on board to bring Ireland forward?
Yeah, like, it's a hard one because, look, we've come on so much in the last few years, you know. And for me personally, I think it might be a case that, look, it's maybe come to its head, you know. With Vera, she's done basically all she can with the team. You know, there was a few questionable people that were left out of the squad. Although, listen, I know it's a hard decision to make when you have X amount of players and you've got a certain amount to bring. That's no easy decision for any manager. You know, again, look, it's one for the FAI, obviously, to fully, I suppose, get their head round. But I think, look, it's a case that she's had a great group of girls. You know, they've served her really well.
Has she deflected the blame onto those great group of girls that has served her well? Like mentioning inexperienced players post-Canada match, singling out Marissa Shiva post-Australia match?
Yeah, they're the kind of things that I'm not a fan of. You know, like, I don't think that girl set out to go and give away a penalty and make us lose 1-0. You know, to kind of pinpoint that as the reason for, you know, her not playing then. And, you know, little things like that, you know, or newcomers, the inexperience, that's why we didn't win yesterday. You know, that back line has probably more experience than, you know, a lot of teams that they've been around the block, you know. There were certain kind of things, you know, like the Lucy Quinn coming off at halftime. I don't know if she was injured or not, but I probably would have left her on for, you know, at least 10, 15 after the second half. Rusha, again, she was doing a bit in midfield for us. You know, I don't know if she was injured, but look, as I said, these are hard decisions for any manager to make. For me, I think it could be a case of, you know, bit of freshness in there. We've shown what we're capable of. We've got a great batch, you know, of young talent coming through, a good core group there within the squad, you know, and look, they can play football, and a lot of them are now are playing in top leagues across the, you know, across Europe, and obviously Denise out in the States. So yeah, look, I think there's so much more to come from this country and the players that we have in it.
I mentioned the players and their ages earlier about the ones that the more experienced crop, but then you mentioned those subs that came on. I mean, Abby, 18, 9 caps. Marissa Shiva, 26, 5 caps. Izzy, 22, 7 caps. Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, really enforces the point, and the other names you mentioned as well. Becca already. Christy, do you think, from looking at this Irish team as well now, that they have the capability to just be able to manage the occasion and to be regularly featuring in big tournaments now?
I think it sort of just shows, like, obviously a lot of the top players, like Becca mentioned, are playing in top leagues around Europe as well as the US. And I think domestically within Ireland, the infrastructure is there. They have the LOIW. They have all these underage teams and sort of the academies, which fuel perfectly, like looking at Shells, for example, just even witnessing how the under 19 sort of funnel into our program and how there's so much collaboration between the two. Obviously, you see these young talents like the likes of Hannah Healy, Jesse Stapleton, and coming up through the ranks and through the systems, who get the chance to play at home on, like, in Ireland and home turf. That's something that Canada, interestingly enough, we don't have a pro league, for reference. We're supposed to launch one in 2025, but I think we're entering an interesting point in time, because I think countries like Ireland, who are sort of hitting their strides, that have the infrastructure in place, have the visibility, like you talked about, the brand partnerships with Sky, with LOITV, and different sort of Cadbury and brands that are launching everything forward. Canada, we rely on all the external leagues around the world to currently offer our national team players a place to stay. There's not one player on our team who plays at home domestically, because we don't have a professional league. So I think, to that point, Ireland has a huge advantage. They have the infrastructures in place, and like Becca mentioned earlier, the quality is continuing to increase year over year. The visibility, the brand partnerships, everything is sort of lining up to follow suit to our friends across the water, who've created sort of a hugely dominant Premier League, which sort of sets the industry standard worldwide for women's football. And I don't think we're far behind, just like Ireland. And yeah, I don't think Ireland or Scotland are far behind the English League in that way. Whereas I think nations such as Canada, it risks us falling off the map, to be honest with you, when countries such as Ireland and Scotland and hit their stride. So I don't know if that sort of answers your question, but I think certainly Ireland's position for future success, and this is just their first of many major appearances at major worldwide events.
It absolutely answers my questions perfectly. Unfortunately, that is where we have to leave it. Christy Gray, thank you very much for joining us, and very best of luck when you do return to Dublin with the Champions League campaign with Shelburne, and indeed the rest of the League of Ireland women's season. Likewise, Rebecca from the sideline at Shells.
Very best.
Mariska. And coach, I'm sure you take a bit of coaching. Who knows? Okay, Becca, Christy, thank you both very much. Lots more to come this evening. We're going to have our Eye on America with Jeff Shepherd, Roy Fitzpatrick from Sailing Ireland, and Irish international Hugo Keenan. We'll hear from all of them in due course. Stay with us here on Game On 2FM.
Game On Rugby.
Now, a little bit earlier on today, regular Game On host Marie Crowe spoke to Ireland international Hugo Keenan. And Marie began the conversation by asking Hugo if he ever dreamed of going to a World Cup with Ireland.
As a young lad who loves sport, whether it's football, rugby, you'd always dream of it. Whether I thought it was realistic, probably not. But it's sort of been a bit of a goal for me to make this World Cup squad. So over the last few years, working hard now. There's a 42-man squad, and I think it's as competitive as ever to make that plane and try to get over to France.
Why did you never think that it would be a realistic dream for you?
I suppose I was a bit of a late breaker through into rugby, and never, to be honest, never thought I'd be playing for Leinster, let alone Ireland. And it was a bit of a slow process to get there. through the academy, through sevens. And yeah, it's only sort of been in the last couple of years where you sort of get that belief that you might be able to do it, especially when you see the likes of your co-players, say for the under-20s, kicking on and playing for Ireland, the likes of James Ryan, Andrew Porter. They played a year after playing under-20s with them. They were capped for the international side. So bits like that give you the confidence that maybe one day you can do it, and yeah, makes you work that extra bit hard to get there.
Did you play other sports when you were younger?
Yeah, I played a lot of soccer growing up, so that would have been my first love. As always, played for Mount Marion from about 6 to 17, and always focused on that until around that period where I was sort of 16, 17 when I was in Blackrock in school, and it was getting a bit more serious and I was starting to climb the ranks of the team, and I wanted to make that SCT team. So I had to finally part ways with my first love to give that a crack. And Peter Smith, who's now working in the RFU and was my Leinster Academy manager, I was lucky enough to have as a coach in sixth year and saw something in me and gave me a shot then. And that sort of gave me the platform to go on from there, from underage to academy and so on.
In a way, you're almost the poster boy for perseverance, because you really stuck with it. And then when the opportunity came, you were able to take it. But how important was it to have patience on your journey?
Yeah, 100%. Like, it's a long process, and you sort of have to be patient, whether it's being in Leinster waiting for your chance. I know a lot of the time the World Cup cycles come about, and in 2019, when the last World Cup was on, that was sort of the first time that I got a bit of a chance with Leinster. I got a run of games. So it's biding your time, waiting for those opportunities, and then just about taking them when they do come about.
You did a little bit of a stint with the sevens as well. What were the benefits of being in the programme?
I thought it was hugely beneficial, especially as a back three. I think I came into Leinster in 2016 and I was nowhere near the first team. There was huge competition there, and the sevens sort of allowed me the platform to go off and work on skills. You get so many involvements, whether it's running, passing, tackling, that at a high level in a lot of space, that it's bound to improve you. And I think I developed well over sort of those two and a half years I was with them. So that led to that sort of 2019 period when I was back trying to get a senior contract with Leinster and got my first opportunities to play for the team.
What's it like going into a Leinster environment, that high performance environment? And as you said yourself, been nowhere next or near the team.
I was still delighted to be in the academy. It was an exciting time for me. It was a huge goal to get in the first place. So not that I was getting complacent or anything, but I had no aspirations to play for Leinster that year. I was lucky enough I did. I got one cap off the bench, made my debut in 2016, but again, only for a couple of minutes because of a few injuries. But I suppose as you do start seeing other players, as I was saying, crack on for Leinster in Ireland that you've played with and friends that you've grown up playing with, it does give you the confidence and makes you more motivated and inspiring to get into that Leinster team. And I came back from the sevens with that ambition to get my senior contract, to get a few caps for the team and give 15s a good crack.
What kind of things did you work on when you were developing as a rugby player? Like, what were the key areas that you focused on in your game?
I suppose it's the basics that you have to, I suppose, improve, and not just working on little weaknesses, whether that was kicking or tackling for me, so to say. Also working on your strengths and trying to grow into that. But I think it's also working closely with the coaches on what they see. I was lucky enough, my time in Leinster started in 2016, and it was the same as Stuart Lancaster's. So it was when he was first in, and worked closely with him, and he was great for my development, as was Felipe, the backs coach for a good period, as is the new coaches now with Goody and all the Irish coaches as well. So it's tapping into the brains that are there. And yeah, I had a whole lot to work on, so I can't put it down to a few things.
In what way did Stuart Lancaster impact your career, do you think?
Hugely. Like, he was we share about 7 odd years together. I know I was gone for a couple of them. I probably worked closely with them in the last sort of 2 or 3 years more so. But like developing on the pitch, but off the pitch as well, like he was great at encouraging players to speak up, to have an opinion, to really bring a point of view to each meeting or training session and challenge you in that regard. And then we obviously know he's got a brilliant rugby brain as well and a great coach. So there's a lot of little things I picked up from him on the pitch as well.
Have you parked the disappointment of the Champions Cup?
It was a hugely disappointing loss. I don't think it's ever dead and buried, to be honest, but you sort of just have to let it motivate you more and use it as a positive thing in that regard. And we had a nice little break, and then you don't really feel like you're getting over it until you're back into the swing of things and back into training and into the Irish environment, where you can just focus on what you can control now, which is improving yourself, improving the team, and getting ready for an exciting period of warm-up test games and hopefully the World Cup.
How do you deal with the disappointment on a personal level, though?
It's not easy. I suppose living with Caelan and Ronan, you get through it together in that regard. We had a tough couple of week or two together. You get close to your family, get close to your friends, get close to the squad members around you. And then ultimately it's about nearly making sure it doesn't happen again and learning from those mistakes that you made as an individual or a team. So we had a bit of a sit down chat as a group with players and a couple of the coaches, and then Stuart gave feedback on it. And then it's, as I said, getting back into training, getting back into Ireland and focusing on what you can control and using it as a bit of extra motivation and something to drive you forward.
Losing a big game is obviously a negative, and there's a lot of Leinster players within that Ireland squad. Is there any danger that that negativity could seep into the camp?
No, you have to park it once you come into camp, and we knew that, but the coaches made that very clear that you can't have any extra baggage dragging you down. You gotta, as I say, use it as a positive, use it as an extra motivator, so flip it on its head in that regard. But no, there's obviously the highs of what the Munster lads went through as well, and it was brilliant to see some of them. I'd be close with them all, and it was great for them and for Irish rugby in that regard. So there's also lads on highs coming in as well, but it's not like they can be any more on a gloating or anything like that, as much as we can't be down in the dumps. So it's just bringing about the best version of yourself into camp every day and being who you are and training hard and getting the most out of it.
Is it a case that the goal has almost shifted now in a way, and you're all in there together trying to make the squad and then go on to achieve your goals at the World Cup?
Absolutely, yeah, 100%. Like, we're there as a collective to get better. It's a great opportunity. We've got a big block to improve, and we know the competition that we're going to be facing in the World Cup. Each of those teams have a huge amount of preparation that they're going through as well. So naturally, they're going to get better as well. So we need to make sure we're constantly improving, constantly growing as a group. So there's a huge amount of purpose to what we're doing and a huge amount of excitement about these weeks, because it's been a good first block, but we're coming into matches now, and this is where we can put those learnings to play.
In sport, we often hear about teams trying to achieve consistency of performance. When it comes to your own individual performance, consistency is something that you seem to be able to get game after game, and I think the selection probably reflects that more often than not. You're on the team sheet. What would you put that down to, your own ability to consistently perform at a high level?
I suppose it's the challenge I set to myself and the coaches set out to me each week, I suppose. Every game, whether it's with Leinster or Ireland, that I've been lucky enough to play in has been big game after big game after big game. And I suppose that challenge excites me, and it's those games that you want to be involved in. And the competition in the group, both Leinster and Ireland, you know, if you're not performing, that someone's going to be chomping at your heels and wanting to take that jersey off you. Sometimes you might feel as a player you don't have that consistency. I suppose we look at the game a small bit more, so we probably scrutinise ourselves in a different way. So yeah, it's that, I think.
So what is the goal for this Ireland rugby team at the World Cup?
I think we're not really scared to say it, to be honest. We're going over for one reason, and to win it. But we talked a bit about that at the start, but that's nearly parked at this stage. And it's all been about getting better over the last couple of weeks, both individually and collectively. I know there's been a lot of onus on like player responsibility in that regard and ownership. So now the big focus is on just the Italy match coming up this weekend. We know how tough of a team they are and how much they've improved, and we had a good battle against them in Rome during the Six Nations. So all focus is on that, and getting ourselves in a good place to push on.
What's camp like, just in terms of the demands and the pressure? Do you get to switch off? Do you get to hang out? How do you pass all the time?
You're kept pretty busy, to be honest. You'd be up before 7 into the High Performance Centre in Blanche by 7:30, and days, not that they're long, but you've got a lot of work to do, and we're probably only getting out of there at 4:30 or 5:00, and then you can have things on in the evening as well, be it dinner, or we've been lucky enough to have a few guest speakers in, or you're reviewing training. But you do get to enjoy each other's company, get a bit of downtime. We've gotten out for a few games of golf on Wednesdays, and then you have the weekends off as well, which is always nice to meet with family, partners, friends, everything. So enjoying not working weekends at the moment.
Are you good at golf as well?
I'm improving, yeah. I've cut the handicap down over the last couple of weeks and hit a bit of form now, so enjoying it.
And just finally then, on the guest speakers, was there anyone that has had an impact on you?
We've had a few cool ones. I suppose the latest was a guy, Kenton Cool. He's a mountain climber. He's climbed Everest 17 times and done K2 once. So he was sharing a lot of experiences with us around high-performing teams and performing in the most stressful environments. So there's definitely little nuggets you take from the likes of him, yeah.
Thanks, Vinnie Hugo, and best of luck in the World Cup.
Appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
That was Marie Crowe chatting to Hugo Keenan in association with Inishella, BWG Foods' new quality Board B approved Irish meat brand, which is available nationwide in a host of stores and supermarkets. Just to update you on the football, it's gone from bad to worse for Shamrock Rovers. They are 2-0 down away to Ferencváros in their Europa League Conference League qualifier. Stay with us. Up next, I'll be chatting to Irish Sailing head coach Rory Fitzpatrick.
Game on 2FM.
Now, I am delighted to be joined by Irish Sailing head coach Rory Fitzpatrick, as Irish Sailing named the 7 sailors who will represent Ireland at the 2023 Allianz Sailing World Championships in The Hague, Netherlands, taking place from the 10th to the 20th of August. The regatta is the first of 3 opportunities for Ireland to qualify for next year's Summer Olympic Games. Rory, thanks very much for taking the call. First and foremost, how are things going in Irish sailing? Because it seems to be good times, good news. We've announced the sailors that will be competing at the Worlds.
Thanks, Shane. Yeah, things are going pretty good. We're moving forward and advancing. We've got a competitive team, and we've got that World Championships come up in The Hague this year. It's the first chance to qualify for the Olympics. And in 3 of the classes, we're really pushing to try and get it over the line to get the qualification in this round. So things are moving forward, and we've got our eyes focused on that, and the guys are working hard towards it.
So flying the flag for Ireland in The Hague are Eve McMahon from Dublin in the Ilka 6. Her brother Ewan McMahon and Carlos Finn Lynch from the National Yacht Club are also competing. Dublin's Robert Dixon and Sean Waddylove from Hote Yacht Club and Skerry Sailing Club respectively, along with Cork duo Schaefer Guilfoyle and Johnny Durkin, who are both from the Royal Cork Yacht Club, will be competing in the 49er men's skiff event. So a lot of talent on show from these Irish sailors.
If things go to plan and they go well for us, we'll have each of those classes qualifying for the Olympics. So, for example, Eve McMahon, she's a young 19-year-old sailor in the Ilka 6 class. That's a women single-handed. It'd be the boat that you'd probably remember Annalise Murphy would have raced. So Eve's quite young, but she's a very good competitor for her age. She's the current youth world champion. At under 18, but now she's 19 in the seniors, and she's capable of qualifying the country. And so I'm actually coaching her directly, and she's a great sailor. She's got her focus set on that. So that'd be a major goal for her. And it's in line with her advancement as an athlete and a sailor. It's as a 19-year-old with her capabilities, that's where she'd be at. Her brother Ewan, he's in the single-handed class, and so is Finn Lynch. That's the UK6s. And both of those boys, they'll be working hard to try and qualify Ireland. So Finn Lynch, he's a former medalist at World Championships, and he'll be pitching to be competing at that level. So qualifying a nation, that's for sure on his mind. And it'd be a top 20 result that it'd be in the range of doing that. But he's come top 10 in the last two World Championships. He had a second and then a sixth in the last two Worlds. So he'll be trying to meet that standard. And at the test event that we did, Olympic test event in Marseille last week, he was a contender for a medal in the final race. So he'll be trying to maintain that form and see if he can get a really good result at the World Championships and then just qualify the nation as a, almost, I don't want to undersell it, but almost as a box ticking exercise against the standard that he's competing against. And then in the double handers, yeah, there's Rob and Sean from Holt and Skerries and Schaefer and Johnny, the two boys from Cork. And they'll be working very hard. They need a top 10 result to qualify the nation. So they'll be looking at close to PBs for both of those boats to do that. Rob and Sean have finished top 10 in World Championships before, so, and they competed in the last Olympics, so it's within their capability. So Rob had a little illness maybe 6 weeks back, and those boys, they're on up from where they were. So they finished 13th in the Olympic test events last week in Marseille, so they'll be trying to get themselves into the top 10 medal race finish, so they'll be happy with that, and that would be enough to do the job.
You mentioned, I suppose, then, like, we're not long after then the Paris test event in France as well, and the results there, Finn Lynch, sixth place, Eve, with the bright future ahead of her, the 2022 World U champion, finishing 11th, with team Dixon Waddy Love then finishing the week in 13th place. You know, with that run of form going into the event, how beneficial is that? And even getting used to the surrounds, considering where the event was held, and obviously where the Paris Olympics are going to be held as well then.
Yeah, no, it was very important. You could look at the event as a warm-up, but we wanted to take it seriously. You know, we wanted to feel some nerves at the event and to feel some of the magnanimity of Olympic Games, because they do the setup like a complete dry run. Everything's identical once you go out to race. So no, even if you were trying to be fully relaxed for it, you'll still get a feeling of the importance of the event. So we wanted that test for the team, and we wanted to, you know, shake the tree and see how our form was. And Finn was coming away with medal form, and he just didn't manage to pull it off in the final medal race to get a medal, but he certainly started that race well, and he's capable of doing that. So that's important for him and his confidence, you know. That was one of his best results so far this year, so he's got the trajectory. In terms of Eve, I was delighted with her performance. She sailed the event with a maturity beyond her years, and you know, she looked like she was going to make it into the medal race. And then when you get close to the final race, the last 10 get into medal race, and she finished 11th, so she missed the medal race by just 1 point. So it had a huge sting for her, and it hurts quite a lot. She was quite upset for quite a while, but I was telling her it's going to make her stronger. At the time, she wasn't feeling it, but I think sometimes success is a poor teacher, and 11th place, it is success, but to have a good level and standard, but also feel that you could have had a lot better, that makes a very hungry person. So I'm glad that that's where she's at and where we're at in the next 3 weeks of work that we have to do before the Worlds.
It would strike me that's a strong mentality as well for such a relatively young athlete.
Yeah, big time. She's very focused and mature for her age, very organised between her sailing and her study. And I've noticed that since she was very young. When she was in fourth year, it was during COVID, so she was able to come and do a winter training with Annalise and Anne-Marie Rindom, the gold medalist, and she was coming in off the water, doing all her study, making sure she had everything organised and together so that she could do all the sailing and get all the schoolwork done. And she's very goal-focused, and she just sticks to it, you know, she doesn't get distracted. So, yeah, just the more experience she gets, the better she's getting, to be honest.
Not to look too far ahead as well, but you mentioned that the Worlds is the first of three possible qualification opportunities for the Olympics. Then is it good to, I suppose, have that safety net, but at the same time, you don't want to be viewing it as a safety net. You want to just go on and perform in the Netherlands.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't make it the first time, it actually gets harder as you go along. So the amount of spots available, they reduce, and people focus in on the qualifying regattas. And then, as well, you can't program towards the Olympic Games. All of the program you have ahead of you, it's dictated by the next qualifying event. So you start following that and chasing it. And it gets more and more difficult. Whereas if you get it done in the first round, then you can focus on the Olympics. So the sailing in the Olympics is in Marseille. And in sailing, the more time you spend at the Olympic venue, the better you get at it. Mm. So we really want to try and get this over the line in the first attempt. And then we can focus in Marseille. So we'll put a base down in Marseille to train. And if the guys get it the first time there, then we know where we're going to be doing our next training session. We know where we're going to be spending a lot of the winter. It's going to be sharpening the skills for Marseille and trying to develop yourself as an athlete and a sailor to have the skill sets there to give you an advantage, basically.
Okay, well, some meticulous planning ahead, no doubt. Listen, Rory, I really appreciate you taking the call, and we wish all the team the very best of luck in the Worlds, as I mentioned, between the 10th and 20th of August this year, and hopefully there'll be plenty of Olympic qualification from Team Ireland. Rory Fitzpatrick, thank you very much.
Thanks, Shane. Appreciate it.
Game on 2FM.
So lots to look forward to for Irish sailing, but we're going to finish up this evening by chatting to Jeff Shepherd. Shep, let's dive straight in. We began the show chatting about the Women's World Cup, and why not discuss it in more detail, because the USA came from a goal down to draw with the Netherlands, one all today. So that's one win, one draw for them so far. What's been the general reaction to their campaign so far over in America?
Look, I'll say this, Shane. I think the reaction after the match, you know, last night, it was last night here in America, was, glad we were able to get that point. Look, the Dutch came out and played a fantastic game, really kind of flabbergasted the U.S. for the first half. They got a goal, you know, less than 20 minutes into the match and, you know, really kind of thwarted any attempts by the U.S. in the first half to kind of, you know, try to pull even. And the United States were able to get a goal, Lindsay Horan off of a corner kick and a header, a nice, you know, really pretty goal to kind of, you know, to get them to pull even. And then it was a battle. I mean, this was a pretty, you know, highly publicized, you know, look, you know, a match that was really being looked forward to. Mm. And I don't think either team disappointed. I think they both played well. They both played very physically. And it was odd, though. I mean, this was the first match. I think this was only the second match ever that the U.S. women trailed in pool play at a World Cup at halftime. So, I mean, you know, it was an odd situation. Rose Lavelle, who is one of the Americans, you know, kind of best players, but she's been coming off the bench in this tournament. I don't know if she probably needs to get the start in the third match against Portugal, because she just gives a little extra something to the team when she's out there. But again, I think, you know, all in all, to be trailing and quite honestly, to not have your best effort to still come away with a point, I know the women would be at least happy with that.
Absolutely. Well, lots to look forward to, Shep. Unfortunately, time is against us yet again. But sure, look, we'll go out the same way we came in, chatting about the Women's World Cup. It will be fascinating final group matches in that group. The US face Portugal, who, of course, knocked out Vietnam earlier today with a 2-0 win. Shane, we'll be back tomorrow. We'll be previewing the All-Ireland Football Final. We'll be chatting cricket, racing, and plenty more besides. Big thanks to Laura Lee Davis and to Andrew O'Connor. Conor for ensuring this evening's show ran smoothly. Stay tuned to 2FM because the brilliant Bette De Silva is up next after we check in with the news desk. So from all of the Game On team, it is bye for now.